All these airline industry layoffs. Do I really want to be a professional pilot? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Karen Kahn. Karen is a veteran airline captain, and she has written a book called Flight Guide for Success, Tips and Tactics for the Aspiring Airline Pilot. I want to talk to Karen today about some of her perspectives on the current situation that faces pilots or prospective pilots getting into the airline industry. Karen, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes out of a busy schedule to talk to our listeners today.
You're so welcome. It's my pleasure. I always enjoy talking about my most favorite topic.
Let's start out with a little bit about your background. I know that because you are not any kind of official representative for the airline for which you fly, you prefer we keep their name out of it, and I'll respect that. But tell us just a little bit in generic terms how you got interested in aviation and what your pathway was to the left seat of an airliner.
Well, I got interested much like somebody might today. I had a friend who flew. He took me out to the airport and said, if you want to learn how to fly, you take an introductory lesson. And in those days, which was 1968, that introductory lesson was $5. Today, you can take the same introductory lesson. It's probably going to cost you about $50. But once in the airplane, I thought, gee, this is so much fun and such immediate feedback. Wouldn't it be fun to do for a living what you love to do anyway and get paid for it? So with that, I went to work and completed my private license. Took me about 7-8 months because I was working at a job I didn't like, but I knew it would earn me money to get my lessons. Mm-hmm. I subsequently went on and went to work for a fixed base operator because I saw that was a place where I could do some work, get some less expensive flying lessons, completed my commercial and instrument. Eventually got a job flying for a guy who had a 182 Cessna, and I told him one day, I was probably my first proactive in my own behalf attempt in aviation. I told him, you don't know it, but what you need is me to fly your airplane and help you run your business. And I did that for a while and then got some more flying, worked as a flight instructor at a large flight school in Oakland. And when the airline started hiring, after the CFI, which is always a tough one for people to build flight time, I found an opportunity in Oklahoma to work as a weekend ground school instructor, teaching private and commercial.
Right.
That venture unfortunately died in about 3-4 months, so I ended up starting my own and figured out that was the best way I could own an airplane and have somebody else pay for it. And then eventually, once the airline started hiring, I applied and was hired in 1977.
Now, how many hours did you have at the time the airline hired you?
I had about 2,000 hours, and they had had very few women with that kind of total flight time apply. So when I went down to Los Angeles at the time, at the urging of a friend who actually worked for United, who wasn't hiring at the time, and I went in and picked up an application from my airline, and my friend said, where are you going? I said, well, I got to take it home, and I got to type it. And he said, no, fill it out right here, which I ended up actually doing after I made a copy of it. I submitted that to the airline, and they called me a couple of days later, and I was actually the fourth woman hired at my airline in 1977.
Let me ask you about this whole glass ceiling thing, because what I observe is that there are still very few women flying airliners professionally, and I hear this talk of a glass ceiling or discrimination. My experience in some other sectors of the business world has been that this looks to me more like one of those activities that just doesn't draw many interested women coming in at the bottom end of the business. Is that accurate?
I think women have to be encouraged that it's not something that requires rocket science or extreme math skills, because it doesn't. So much of flying is logical. And in the years I've spent teaching, I've actually found that women frequently do a better job because they pay close attention to detail and follow instructions well. I think the nice thing about aviation is there isn't a glass ceiling. There's much more a case of, certainly once you get into a company where they have a seniority system, which all the airlines do, which is the person with the highest number, or should we say the lowest number, advances first. I found at one point I actually was having to ask somebody if they knew that I was actually going to be their victim for the day. I was taking a check ride, and of course our names were only listed by our first two initials and our last name. And he was so chatty and nice, it was kind of like I thought, well, do you know that I am the person you're supposed to give a check ride to? I was concerned he was waiting around for a mail. And he says, oh, yeah, I know, no problem. But that's what I've always liked about aviation was the fact that once you got into the higher ranks, that you advanced by the fact that you can do the job, not by the fact of what your sex is.
And is that a fairly... Is that observation applicable across the industry, do you think? I mean, my experience, let me just relate it to an experience I had. I used to work in the radio business and did for many years, and the FCC used to impose quotas, racial quotas on radio stations. You could face having your license not renewed as a radio operator if the racial makeup of your staff did not somewhat reflect your community. And it was later thrown out by the Supreme Court as an illegal quota, but they keep trying to bring it back. But what I observed was that it was often hard to recruit people from ethnic groups not served, focused on by the format of that radio station, and that we often had to do aggressive recruiting. And I see some of that happening in terms of companies trying to balance their workforces in terms of the male-female ratios as well.
I don't think that happens. I mean, I think initially there was a decision in 1979 that actually caused United Airlines to do a lot of hiring of women, and rightfully so. They now have quite a large percentage of women. The airline I work for never, I won't say fell into that trap or felt pushed to do that. They hired the women who applied who were qualified. We have probably a smaller percentage of women. Throughout the industry, I would say women are about 5 to 6% of the pilot population. You know, there can be a number of different things. There's a whole arena of, women technical educators, a group that tries to encourage young girls to get into areas of math and science. And I suspect a lot of it is, you know, cultural as well as upbringing as well as just interests. But I don't think there are any barriers. As a matter of fact, I think women these days have a much better opportunity because there are a lot of scholarships out there and available to them if only they are, you know, there to qualify. So I kind of wish that when I started there'd been that many for me to take advantage of.
Karen, I haven't received or been able to review the book yet, but I do know enough about the table of contents to have some questions for you about getting into the business from your perspective, and we'll deal with those when we come back from our break. My guest is Karen Kahn, who is an airline transport pilot and airline captain and has written Flight Guide for Success. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Karen Kahn, who is a veteran airline captain and has written Flight Guide for Success, Tips and Tactics for the Aspiring Airline Pilot. The book is in its third reprint now, Karen. How long has it been out there? And what made you decide to put what you had in your head into a book form? Because not too many people get to that step.
Paul, I started talking with pilots about 18, 19 years ago. I had found there was really nobody out there who was willing to talk honestly and impartially about how to get into the business. At that time, probably the late 80s, there were enough people talking to the folks who were all ready to go to the airline and just needed kind of the last brush-up step. But the poor person who was either just starting out or was in what we call the pilot wasteland between about 400 hours flight time and about 1,000 who couldn't get the flight time because they didn't have a job to build time, and they couldn't get the flight time because they didn't have the job, and vice versa. I thought, well, isn't there a way that we can help them and be honest and impartial about it? So I began writing articles for various different magazines and eventually had enough material that I started also at the same time a counseling service to try to talk with people. In 1997, I put some of the articles together into a book and subsequently reprinted that. After 9/11, my real question was, are there enough people out there who are really still interested in aviation? And after a couple of years and looking around and talking with people, I found, yes, as a matter of fact, there was even more interest. So the articles are actually ones that I've had published that all pertain to the questions people ask when they're looking to start or continue or get back into a career in aviation as a professional pilot. Although I quickly tell my friends who aren't interested in aviation that the advice in the book actually works fine for anybody who has a passion to do anything. It's more a case of how to do for a living what you love to do anyway and have somebody help you, believe in you, and assist you and mentor you onward.
Well, some things have changed over the past few years. I know that we were talking before we started this interview about a projection by the IATA that we're going to need 17,000 new pilots a year. Boeing recently had a figure that put it at 18,000. So there seems to be a relatively close agreement between the studies that we're going to have a real shortage of pilots over the next few years. And we're starting to hear anecdotes about flight instructors who are plucked out of their jobs at Part 141 flight schools as soon as they hit 250 hours. So obviously, the airlines are reaching down much further in the experience pool for entry-level applicants than they did, for example, at the time when you were there. Given this change in paradigm, what is the best way for someone who wants a job flying professionally to get into the business?
Well, I first will say I haven't seen a lot of airlines reaching into the 250-hour pilot pool.
Well, so, there's some people winding up in right seats of regionals with about that number of hours at some of the companies.
Right. You're going to probably see some slowing here, but I always tell people now is a great time. You always want to get into our business when there's a downturn, because right now you're not ready anyway, and usually things will start to turn once you are ready. I'm very much an advocate of looking thoroughly and closely at all of the different options that are available, and my book talks about various ways from, you know, attending a big school or a small school, and which rating should I get when, and where do I find the money, to finding quality jobs to in order to build flight time. So there's lots of different options. One of the things we recommend to people is that they read the book first, because it's really designed to answer all those questions. And then if they still have questions, to come and talk with us, because our goal is to help you save time and money. It's not to try to sell you something. And I think you've got some great opportunities out there, but I will always tell people it's not for the faint of heart. It's not a snap. You know, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of responsibility, there's a lot of learning, and I'm pleased to say still, for me, at 20,000 plus hours, a lot of fun. So the cool thing is there's lots of ways to go about it, and you can go through the straight flight school route, you can throw huge amounts of money at it, you can throw substantially smaller amounts of money at it. It's nice that we have all those options still available.
What about the different types of time that are listed on your resume and the balance between them? I know that it's not enough if you have, for example, if you have 2,000 hours flying in Cessna 172s, that doesn't necessarily fill in the whole picture for your employer. How much are they asking now in multi-engine time and turbine time and that sort of thing? Have those ratios changed over the past few years?
I don't think they've changed substantially, but the more multi-engine time you have, the more closely they'll look at you. Multi-engine time is valued almost double the single-engine time. So I actually talk with people and suggest if you want to accelerate the process, think strongly after getting your private license in a single-engine airplane, think about getting your multi-engine rating and building all of your subsequent time in a twin. Because a pilot who shows up with 600 hours total time, and maybe 400 of that is multi-engine, is a really hot property versus somebody who shows up with 800 hours or even 1,000 and has 25 hours of multi-engine. Too often people leave the multi-engine till last, not recognizing that the airlines give it a very high value. And unfortunately, you know, people forget that and then try to get it all at the end and find themselves having spent a lot of money that they didn't need to. So I think if you'll look closely at your situation, figure out what kind of options you have, and then get some good advice, that will frequently help you spend your money wisely.
Given the nature of the fleet out there, especially if you're using a certified flight instructor as a tool to build hours, there are only going to be so many of those hours that you can bill other people at in a multi-engine plane. What are some of the other routes maybe for getting that kind of experience?
Well, we've seen, and I've talked about in my book, a number of inventive ideas of people who figured out ways to buy a light twin, use it as an adjunct to their business, build flight time and cross-country experience, which was exactly what the airlines want to see. So a lot of it's being proactive in your own behalf, being inventive, and of course, we also always have some good ideas for you, but a lot of it is looking outside, you know, kind of the outside your own arena to say, where can I make this fit in? And I'm always telling people to have something else that you know how to do. If you go to an aviation college and get an aviation degree, which I think is a great idea, be sure you have another skill, because aviation is famous for their downturns just about every 7 years. And it's important that you know how to do something else and that you may find can be a great adjunct to your flying and keep you busy and well-fed during those lean times.
You're starting to sound a little bit like my mom when I told her I wanted to be a disc jockey, and you're also sounding a little bit like the people who talk to college sports stars when they go into professional sports. You know, if I have something to fall back on. But getting past that now, if I have 600 hours of total time and 400 hours in multi-engine, and I have been a business owner, I'm probably not 21 years old. We're talking about getting into a profession that has a mandatory retirement age, which I think there are two things there. One, it sort of says, well, how late do I want to go into life before I start this from the standpoint of my own expenses? And second, how late in life do I want to go into this knowing that airlines are maybe going to look with a more jaundiced eye at the larger number on the age line on the resume?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because I talk quite a bit about older pilots' midlife career changes, because I've always talked to the older pilot and said, use it to your advantage. You know, if you think of the average airline passenger, they have a great sigh of relief when they see some of this nice gray hair. I've actually had people tell me, well, why don't you dye your hair? And I say, no, I earned every one of these gray hairs, and I'm going to be sure that I use it to its best advantage.
Back in the days when they used to leave cockpit doors open on airliners, an old friend of mine, Walt Raby, who is a former Boeing test pilot, said, you know, when you get into bad weather and you're bouncing around, you want to look up there and you want to see white hair up there.
Right. So we actually find there's some really good opportunities, because I talk about in my book several different approaches. And of course, it's a hard decision, because you're going to go from probably doing quite well in the business world to what we think of as starvation wages. But if you have the passion and the interest, and may I add, a side business or skill that you can use to supplement your income, it can frequently become a very lucrative and fulfilling occupation for you and get you out of the office that, you know, seems to drive chair-bound pilots nuts and into the sky where you'd like to be.
Well, Karen, I look forward to getting the book, and I want to make contact with you after I get a chance to read it, because it occurs to me that there are any number of things on which you'd make a great guest for our listeners, other than just the career side of this. And I want to thank you very much for taking some time out. I know you're busy today, and we look forward to having you back again.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's very nice to talk with you, and I look forward to coming back, because I think there's all kinds of interesting topics, and maybe we'll even get some good questions from some of your listeners.
Karen, thank you for helping me not overlook that this time. We do want emails, and if you have any questions for the next time Karen is back, please let me know. My email address is paulp, that's P-A-U-L-P, @aero-news.net. That's Aero spelled A-E-R-O. Karen Kahn is a veteran airline captain and has written a book, Flight Guide for Success. You can find the book at Amazon.com or at AviationCareerCounseling.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.